Well, welcome. This is Dave Kruger. How are you? I hear there are some early birds here.
Indeed.
Great. Now, I don't know if you got the email. I only was notified by CTA at a fairly late time today about the attendees. So if you didn't get the email, what I sent around was a couple of questions. One, if we were to sit down right now face-to-face, what's the most important question you'd like to ask me about this topic? And secondly, if you walked away saying this was one of the best seminar series you've ever attended, what would you walk away with? So I appreciate some of the responses I've gotten, and I want to be sure that I get others. Other thoughts about those two questions from any of you at this point? And if you'd identify yourself when you talk, as much as you want to identify yourself. Burning questions about coaching professionals? I do appreciate the ones I've received, and I welcome any other input or thoughts or reflections. It really does help me shape the material that I present, and I want to be sure and work in answers to your questions and concerns. What kind of experiences do you have thus far in coaching professionals, or is it that you're wanting to have experiences? What's the level of your experience? Anyone?
Hello, Dave?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Yolanda Torres.
Welcome. I was feeling kind of lonely. Go ahead, please.
Sorry. I was just joining you and setting up a little bit here.
Okay.
Yeah, the reason I took this class is that I'm making a shift from working one-on-one with individuals and wanting to go towards the corporate arena. I'm certified recently in DISC and am in the process of getting my certification in SEI. So social emotional intelligence, for anyone who's listening that wasn't sure what that is.
Okay.
So that's my purpose in taking this class.
Okay, and specifically in the corporate arena, are you wanting to coach who? Or what kind of groups?
Executives and or their staff.
Okay.
So my question is, you know, I've worked in the corporate arena and for-profit and non-profit, but now approaching someone as a life coach in the professional arena, wanting to learn a little bit more about how best to go about that and feel confident in the process. I think that's my biggest concern, is feeling confident in approaching an executive. I'm doing a lot of reading about, you know, working with corporations and so on, reading a lot of Patrick Lencioni, and which was referred to me by David Meyer when I took this with him.
Okay.
And so just wanting to feel comfortable, and I thought that this class would help to prepare me for that.
Okay. I think it will, and just as a little bit of a preface to what we're going to talk about, we're going to begin to look at approaching professionals, how to think differently about that. I think what you'll find with professionals, as I'm defining that entire group for our discussion here, of practicing professionals such as, you know, docs, dentists, attorneys, performing professionals such as athletes, actors, is that especially with practicing professionals, you really have to, much like with executives, you have to enter by the right brain. You have to enter in terms of return on investment and look at optimizing performance and the things that are harder indicators of success, as opposed to entering with the left side of the brain for life coaching, to look at various kinds of enhancement and aspects of success in various arenas. So listen with that perspective, because I think that you're thinking in the right track. And I just want to say, and we'll return to this, confident is a state of mind. And I think that that is the most important thing that we do when we engage with someone and interact with someone. Let me ask if I can get a mute, a star six, for anyone who isn't talking. We have a number of people on the line, and I want to be sure we manage background noise, and you probably don't hear the noise that your receiver is picking up. And don't forget to unmute star six again when you want to discuss something. So thanks, Yolanda, and we'll definitely be coming back to that. I appreciate that, and that helps me a bit, too. And thanks again to those of you who have already sent in questions. I definitely have those in mind. Anyone else for right now? Okay, well, I'll begin, and I promise to to generate some questions in your mind by what I say, but I'm going to go on lecture mode, so you don't have to worry about the background noise, but I'm going to save some time at the end for us to come back and discuss. So have any clarifications, discussion, or questions in mind for then. Okay, what professionals in practice have in common is that they've dedicated their careers to a body of knowledge, and their clients or their patients come to them for the sole purpose of purchasing their expertise. Their expertise to solve special problems and give specific advice is backed by their professional standards and substantiated by laws or codes. Now, even with rigorous training to solve specialized problems, for example, medical, emotional, legal, or to provide specialized advice, for example, financial, tax, architectural, professionals probably haven't been trained to know themselves better, to understand the dynamics of human behavior, to remove stress as an obstacle to their success, to pursue personal development as vigorously as they pursue professional advancement, maybe to convert from work ethic to performance ethic, to emotionally and strategically manage career transitions, because they'd assume they'd do one thing, the profession they'd trained for all their lives. That was certainly my assumption. To market their expertise, and they often have an antipathy for marketing. They've assiduously avoided it. I know these things. As a group, professionals tend to be highly and specifically trained at what they do, think rigorously, and want active collaboration. We've only begun to apply coaching in collaboration with these professionals and their specific client groups. And remember, when I'm talking about each of these professionals, I'm talking about a lot of niches. I'll share with you a more in-depth coaching theory and application I've developed that I think you'll find useful, especially with this group of clients and perhaps all your clients. So in this seminar series, we'll address these issues. Our role as catalysts of change, the psychology and neuroscience of change, some principles of change and transition, regulating states of mind, managed emotions, and how to deal with obstacles along the way. We'll examine some specific interventions with professionals, what change means for them, and the success strategies that particularly work with them. We'll discuss some specialized topics in coaching professional clients, strategies with the resistant client, the dangers of extreme success, understanding the mind-brain dynamics of change. The overview so far speaks only to practicing professionals. I want you to think about another entire genre, performance professionals, actors, authors, professional athletes. The primary challenge these clients have is self-regulation, to stay grounded in their ideals and energy management in the face of extraordinary demands and stimulating success. We're going to spend an entire seminar on mastering states of mind, much of which was spawned by working with gifted and successful performance professionals. I mention this as introduction to really cue your radar for various applications of coaching professionals. So in this seminar, we're going to talk about the coach as catalyst of change. Now, that's not really different from what you know, what you practice, but I want to highlight the things that are different, that may be considered differently in terms of approaching and practicing with professionals. So let's first look at process versus content in the coaching exchange. I want to focus together on the coach-client relationship because there are aspects that I don't see anywhere else, and I believe they're important to you in getting, keeping, and benefiting professional clients. Because of this, I think it can make a big difference in your effectiveness and your income. Now, we're taught as coaches to address the content, the agenda, intentions, actions, goals. We've discussed beliefs, behaviors, and performance. But I want to focus on the process. It's what happens while you're talking about something else. And I have a case illustration in just a bit that'll give you an idea of one of my versions of that. Because this is not simple or linear. Our clients will tell us several things. What's most important, what their needs are, what's beneficial, and what's not. Now, for this, we have to listen very carefully and listen to various forms of communication. In fact, the previously uncoachable client may be the one who's been unheard at the level of need expressed, or has subtly gotten the coach to respond in a way that reiterates an old pattern. For example, the coach gets frustrated in the same way that others have in engaging the client. New addition, old story. Or a client may reiterate the same process as with others. For example, presenting confusion about how to proceed, ambivalence and reluctance to move ahead, the coach finally ends the uncertainty and suggests an action. The result? The old story is recreated. Someone else functions for the client. These clients will show you in the process of the relationship what they most need in coaching. They'll show you the way in the process with you how they create perhaps a glass ceiling for themselves. They'll show you the compromises in relationships by their relationship with you, the limiting beliefs, or the way they take away their own successes after creating them. Only the mentor coach has the vantage point to help them change these stories and make a major difference for the rest of these clients' lives. These clients may be better understood in a different model that I think offers a more optimum responsiveness. Now, here's another example of what I mean by process. Clients know what they need, though not perhaps in conscious, logical, or daytime language. They'll try in every way possible to let us know what it's like to be them, to activate the aspects of their experience needing to be addressed in a coaching venue, in a here and now model. We have to read this old story accurately because for the client it's not the old story, it's reality, and guide the co-creation of a new story. So we gather as information, not taking it personally. Remember, we put our ego in a blind trust. Some of these kinds of unspoken subtext from clients, self-statements, although stated directly at times as if it were about the mentor coach, a wish or fear. Well, you'll have the answers, or you don't have any answers either. Disappointed recognition. Hope. You're the greatest. The unspoken subtext, so I too can become great. Feelings. To use as information now and to move toward a goal, not to go backward and be understood as if in an old story. The second no that always means yes, or once would have been sufficient. Now, as coaches, we listen carefully, simply, literally. Deepest truths are clothed in the simplest of garments. We believe what's said the first time before other words get in the way. We also hear somatic language, literally and symbolically, the rumbling stomach that whispers swallowed pain, hypertension, a pain in the neck. The role of storyteller and listener unfolds on the shared lap of the coaching relationship. Part of the experience of story making is the feel, the safety, the trust, the ambiance of connectedness, the resonance of voice as well as words with a knowing receiver. Lily Tomlin said, "He listened with an intensity most people have only while talking." And the message contains the message. The message is a full and valid communication to be understood in its own right before the venue is changed. In other words, the immediate communication and experience of a client yields initial understanding before looking at what the client is trying not to say, may really mean, or where the client really wants to go. For example, often a client will say as a first sentence what he or she needs to do in that session. And I've had the opportunity to see this play out in hundreds of coach-to-coach sessions in training for CTA. A couple of examples. Well, I know I should just say no and stay on track, but here's the struggle I have with time management. Now, that's the agenda in neon lights. It's not just a drop-off comment. I worked with an executive who began with, well, I know I'm going to have to dissolve this partnership. Here's the situation. This was an attorney with the firm who was a major partner in a big firm. Toward the end of the session, he said, well, this is great. You've helped me see exactly what I need to do and strategize to end the partnership. I played back for him his own acknowledgement in the beginning, the first sentence of the session, and summarized the process of insight he had through the session to really make it his own. My purpose was to help him internalize the process, the model, so ultimately he wouldn't need me to do it. Now, it's not enough to construct just a new experience. We need to help a client create and formulate a new model in which to understand and incorporate these new experiences. This new model, this container of present and template for the future, is hope personified. It's a collaborative immersion of coach and client. The past and present are never more distinguishable at the very moment they're juxtaposed. This is the new story, now and next, present and future. An example of what I mean by that. One of the most powerful forces of the human psyche is our return to our fundamental identity. So if someone makes a change or does a behavioral change and does something different, unless we help them incorporate that as an evolving new model and take it in as part of an evolving new identity, they'll revert back to the old behavior. Now, as a footnote, I want to borrow a concept from psychoanalysis and talk about it briefly to show the usefulness in coaching. Transference is the repetitive ways of organizing current experiences based on past experiences. Transference is the organizing process of how we perceive, process, and attach meaning to people and experiences. It simply means we use software developed in the past to read a current experience. It's a combined neural lexicon of repetition and self-statement. So this process that our minds and brains use is helpful because it allows us to use vast experience to quickly read and respond to situations. But at times it can be limiting because past perceptions and solutions become outdated. In other words, the software tailor-made for past experiences may simply no longer be relevant. So in coaching, we focus on the new story. We don't bother the old story until it bothers us. That is, we don't engage it. If necessary, we address the belief or assumption of the old story just enough to cleave it from the present, to refocus on the new, evolving, co-created story. Now, here's an example that I want to apply in terms of discussing the process, just to give you an idea of what specifically I'm talking about. This is a recent example, and I want to use it to point out a number of things, but one is that when we coach professionals, we really have to up our game. The basic three SMART goals, two initiatives for each SMART goal, and one next best action for each initiative is just not enough. And this example is of bringing the process into focus. This was at a retreat to train an organization, it was their national meeting, to develop its own internal mentoring program. And I did a demonstration mentor coaching with one of the professional mentors, and that's what I want to talk about. She volunteered to do this in front of 50 other people from all over the country. So she was a brave soul. I asked her initially what she wanted to focus on in our session. And she was vague. She spoke in generalities about mentoring sessions with one of her proteges with whom she had significant challenges but couldn't really address with any specificity about what it was that she wanted to focus on or what the challenges were. I then asked her what she wanted to walk away with from the coaching session. She still could not get beyond any vague generalities. After unsuccessful efforts to get her to focus with me on what she wanted specifically to both focus on and get out of the session, I paused and asked if I could share a hunch with her. I wondered if she was experiencing the same reluctance as her protege to open up and share a meaningful exchange, preferring instead to stay at a distance, even though feeling stuck. She confirmed this was very true and said how embarrassed and reluctant she felt to share any of her struggles in front of her peers. All of her bravery ended after she raised her arm and I called on her. She had never before participated in a demonstration mentor coaching or had any witnesses for her mentoring sessions. I told her that I understood entirely and that it wasn't easy to share intimate details about an experience in front of somebody else, especially a whole number of peers from across the country. I suggested that she consider with me her experience as an exact read of her protege, and that the reluctance that she was experiencing with me and showing me through her embarrassment was precisely what her protege was trying to tell her through the process of the exchange rather than consciously and with words. She immediately understood what I was saying and recognized that that was precisely what was happening. She then began to open herself to discuss aspects of the engagement that were challenging but were accessible to her, and collaborated with me on strategies and ways to address this issue with herself first as a prerequisite to addressing it with her protege. Because immersed in her own discomfort, she was unaware of the unfolding interactive attachment pattern and its parallel between herself and her protege. We came to see that when she felt confident about herself as a mentor and about sharing her story, as we got to in this process, that she could be totally present with me. She then knew that she could help her protege evolve his story and dare to risk some of his experiences with her. Her parallel of both the process and the attachment pattern in the engagement with me allowed both of us to see how her protege was teaching her exactly what it was like to be him. And that's a principle that I think is really important, that our clients are always doing the very best job possible to show us exactly what it's like to be them. If we hear it in that way, we don't get personally involved, we don't hear it as resistance, get frustrated, but that's their job description, they're doing that. And especially that's important with professionals, and I'll elaborate more on that in just a bit. So, let's look at that from a slightly different perspective. What do clients want from us? The coach and client become co-authors of that new story and create a current meaning that allows a distinctness of old versus new, an evolving new story. And we are always teaching others how to respond to us. A client is always teaching a coach what it's like to be her, creating an in vivo demonstration of what needs to be known so the coach can teach it back to her out loud, not to take it personally. We must be open to that learning and not let teaching the client our theories or let our agenda get in the way. Now, although we inevitably listen within the context of our own system of meaning and knowing, we continuously bridge to the experience and system of meaning of the client. In this co-created space, the client develops an authentic story. What our clients want from us as coaches, I believe, is the adult version of what we as children wanted from our parents. Our clients want unself-conscious participation in serious work and sometimes in play. Acceptance of praise without embarrassment or deflection so that we can give it back to its creator as self-statement. Full immersion in, yet not full reaction to, their full feelings, never losing sight of their internal perspective and best interest. To hope that we will see the self the client hopes to become, and see the evolving new story that sometimes gets obscured from the client's view. To see at times a thought, feeling, or behavior as an answer to a question its creator has not consciously dared to ask. Now, I stole that from X-Files, but I'm sticking with it. To hope that we hear the silent intent embedded in the compromised result, to see the hope camouflaged in the frustrating process, to hope that the coach will not be awkward, self-conscious, or say anything that would distract from the client's immersion in his process. The architecture of trust silently forms while you're talking about other things. Collaborating together, even laughing together, gives oxygen to hope, highlights the relief and release of new experiences, and pushes creativity to full flight. We help the client mourn the old story. We know that no matter how ready for change they are, it's like saying goodbye to an old friend who's been there for a long time. The client mourns the self that he leaves behind, the self of the old story. Julia Cameron said it beautifully in The Artist's Way. I'm astounded that I could let go of the drama of being a starving artist. Nothing dies harder than a bad idea. Invention has been sabotaged and creativity imprisoned by remaining in the old story, repeating the same storylines. We are in the present moment together and co-create a new story with our clients. We believe in someone until they can believe in themselves, and they'll teach us both why. The corollary to believing in the client is that the coach must be the kind of person in whom the client can believe and respect and trust. The client has to believe the coach will respond, guide, teach, and model in a way that facilitates growth. This bond, this immersion and understanding within the present moment, may be one of the most powerful and most change-making experiences that the client has ever had or ever will have in his or her life. Now, I remain curious about my clients continuing to write their narratives after we end formal coaching. I believe that coaching is a developmental process, continuing in its influence throughout life. I've said to clients, I'm going to be your coach for life, though regular meetings will be necessary only for a very short period of time. Consider intervals of quarterly or at least yearly updates that can be beneficial for the client. Booster shots. We witness a continuing developmental journey at regular intervals. There doesn't have to be problems to come in. This future reference has an organizing capacity for the client. Now, what we do with each client is not about being right, having pristine theory and technique, or even mutually idealizing achievement. But the bottom line always is this: does it work? Coaching allows the beauty of waking up to specific possibilities, strengths, untapped resources. We help people become more of who they really are. And the client must risk bringing an issue to the table and further that risk by looking at it. The exchange must be worthy and true. It must be real. The coach must be fully present, fully himself or herself. Hemingway captured this principle, I believe, when he wrote about the craft of writing. Write the truest sentence you know. So as you're listening to this, I hope you're thinking about this really isn't different than any other really good coaching, to work with professionals. And that, I think, is important. And as you expand your expertise, that will enhance your confidence. And remember, as we said in the initial discussion, confident is a state of mind. That is the primary determinant of whether someone will sign on for you in coaching. If you believe in yourself and the client and show that through the state of confidence. We'll return to that in some studies that will illustrate that. So there are three foundation components of coaching that I want to highlight here. One is neutrality. Now, the client may be resistant about proceeding, may feel ambivalent about which way to go with two seemingly equal options, may be creating a surface story or a shadow story, or just have ambivalence and ask the coach which of the two stories he should choose. Now, if the coach logs in on one side or the other, picks a side, or has a bias and prompts the client in one direction, this action can preclude the client from resolving that dilemma, from creating two stories into one cohesive integrated story that aligns with ideals and needs and goals and strategies. The client doesn't come to his own conclusion. In fact, this is from the book, The Cultural Creatives. When you're faced with a paradox, the one response that's certain not to work is to choose sides. Neutrality simply means we stay equidistant from either side of the client's ambivalence or dilemma. By understanding both sides, the client can own creating each side, of creating two stories simultaneously. Sometimes they go in opposite directions. An example is, I want to generate more income and create wealth. And the shadow story, well, I don't really believe I have what it takes to really make big money, or making a lot of money is really unspiritual, or I just don't think I want to put in that kind of time and take away. So there's surface stories and shadow stories. Professional coaches practice neutrality by asking powerful questions and not getting into the position of trying to fix, give answers, or become expert in their clients' lives. The fastest way to foreclose understanding for either coach or client is premature action. The most common thing that gets in the way of understanding something is trying to fix it. Pick a side of a conflict or a dilemma and act on it, either coach or client, and it creates the illusion of resolution, but it only forestalls understanding and a true resolution. Yet the coach is not neutral in a particular way. In our alliance to co-create effectiveness and success, we hold the vision of what the client can do and be. We may be the first person, unambivalently, unabashedly, in that client's life who is totally 100% dedicated to that client's success. A secondary, empathic listening. Now here's an example of failed empathy. I once offered to an analytic patient what I thought was a really poignant comment. My physician client on the couch looked back and said, "No, Kruger, first you've got to be with me before I can go someplace new with you." The most elegant and succinct supervision I've ever had about how we have to be with our client, often empathically resonating with our client, so that together we can go someplace new after we've established that common ground. But we have to be with them before they can go someplace new with us. Empathy is to place ourselves in the inner world of another person without getting lost there. It describes a listening perspective positioned inside the experience and point of view of another to resonate with and understand his or her subjective reality, their entire mental state. A third, insight, understanding, and change. An illustration here. A colleague who also coaches professional athletes, and I emphasize again, don't leave athletes out when you think about coaching professionals, described how he became interested in working with pro athletes. His son, a superb athlete, had just completed basketball camp. He was in mid-adolescence, I think, at the time, his son's favorite sport. My colleague was baffled that he was one of the poorest free-throw shooters at his camp. And when he got home, he observed his son shoot in the backyard. He saw a pattern of one shot going in, and the next four to five would go out. And he would pause and then start over and repeat the same pattern. One shot went in, four or five went out. And it happened again and again. And then my colleague asked his son if he could try an experiment with him. And his son said, "Well, sure, whatever." And he asked his son to take the ball, to shoot it. And then after he shot it and made it, his dad said, "Okay, wait, start over." So he made the shot and he said, "Okay, I'd like you to start over now, totally." And the son got a little frustrated, but he went along with what his dad did. By starting over after each free shot success, he sank 18 in a row. Now, what happened for his son to enhance his performance several hundredfold? Now, we always have assumptions, a set of rules that we have in going about any task. Mostly, these rules are outside our awareness that can make it difficult to change. He simply reframed his son's performance so that all of his shots were first shots. And after that, they were all successful. He found a pattern that worked, and intervened for his son to use that pattern more often. And we're going to talk more about mapping the function of the brain in session 3 when we talk about regulating states of mind and performance. So that's a really simple aspect of coaching. You do more of what works and less of what doesn't. And the pattern wasn't working, but there was a pattern. It was working. So he found a way to do more of that. Now, insight and understanding can be an important component of change, but insight and understanding alone do not replace old lived experiences. A new lived experience is required, one that repeats until it creates new habits, new circuits, and neuronal networks. Now, underlying causes are always present for any problem, often complex, multi-determined causes. But a coaching approach is to use underlying causes only as information, since the causes themselves do not prevent effective behavior from occurring. So when a person moves toward realizing a goal, problems seem to dissolve. When someone fills space with present experience, there's no room for past experience. With full engagement in moving ahead, there's no energy left to create internal obstacles or to collude with external ones. The most important problems often can't be solved. They have to be outgrown. Now, we'll return to this in a later session, but just to briefly mention a study that was done by a leading family clinic. What they did was to look at families who came in and all the problems that they had and presented with, and what they would ask is, was there a time that this problem did not occur? Was there a single time that this particular issue did not occur? So what they did was focus on that time that it did not occur. And what they found in focusing on and understanding that, and think about the application here for coaching. This is exactly what we do in looking at now and next, the choice architecture of the present moment, and looking at what's worked in the past. When this very well-known, very large study of this family clinic looked at the exception, what they found was the exception was the solution. And whenever the focus was on the solution, people got significantly better, significantly faster than in the traditional way of looking at deconstructing, understanding problems, and looking at revisions. Now, in my work as an executive mentor coach, there's some things I've come to appreciate about change that are really different from my former work as a psychoanalyst. One, the prerequisite to change is not necessarily insight and understanding. You have to be in a new story before you can give up an old story. Significant life change occurs by doing and experiencing things differently in the present moment. And I'm saying this in part to also emphasize that many of you will work with, and some of you are, practicing therapists, counselors, psychologists. I don't think we have any psychiatrists in our group right now other than me, but former psychiatrists. That if those of you who work with practicing professionals will need to understand them and the mindsets that they have. And, you know, some changes you have to get ready for after they happen, such as physicians adapting to medicine practices changing with managed care, or attorneys after new laws dried up potential cases. Another, someone does not have to be motivated to begin doing something. Think about how many times, I can reflect on how many times I've heard a coach-to-coach session begin, well, I really need to get motivated to work out regularly. I need to get motivated to diet or to lose weight. You don't have to be motivated to do something. The professional athlete or actor gets up in the morning, goes to the gym on a regular basis, on a daily basis. They're not generally, they're not motivated to do that, but they do it. Motivation is not essential, but a plan and sticking to it are. Change requires ownership of a person's story. And that authorship is an active, self-determined process, not ghostwritten by past experiences or overridden by the unconscious. The microscopic version is that we establish this ownership of each coaching session by having the client set the agenda. Now, I want to end with a summary, a kind of overview, and I want you to reflect on what you know already in coaching that you can apply, and as we look at applying what you do and the focus of what you do to professionals. This is how we facilitate change in coaching, 12 caveats, and this is all in your outline. Also, I wanted to mention, I did in the beginning, in your outline, you'll also see the corresponding pages for exercises and work pages in the workbook, and I would recommend doing that prior to each of the seminars to get the most out of the seminars. So I've distilled the following principles that focus on facilitating change in the mentor-coaching relationship. One, each person's life story is created. Recognition and acceptance of story ownership is a prerequisite to assessment and change. Two, understanding begins with examinations of which storylines work and which do not. Then, to change the ones that don't work. The ones that do work need to be kept, possibly enhanced. Three, knowing what not to do is at least as important as knowing what to do. You may not always know what the next right thing is, but you can almost always know what it isn't. Four, distinguish what to change, to accept, to let go, and to enhance. Each of these four deserves a bit of consideration at least. Placing energy into what works, coupled with accepting and letting go what can't be changed, can result in significant effectiveness in the application of our energy. Five, when people create their own answers, they've signed on to invest in the outcome. Questions direct a focus. They clarify, illuminate, even story bust, but they focus where our minds and brains go. Six, someone has to change an internal model of assumptions to sustain the new story. They have to evolve the transition to their model and their identity when they make changes externally in order for those changes to last. In other words, this part of themselves, their identity, has to change in their minds and brains along with the behavior patterns and the neural conditioning. Seven, we don't see things as they are, we see things as we are. So we learn to recognize our own assumptions and beliefs and how they color what's perceived. Assumptions manifest as feelings and behavior. By making assumptions explicit, those which facilitate and those which interfere can become more visible. Eight, change is constant and inevitable. It's the resistance to change that generates most problems. People are most successful when they learn from yesterday, anticipate tomorrow, and integrate the impact of new experience. This is often a challenge with professionals because they've been doing the same thing often for very long. They're perceived as experts. They're revered as authorities. And it's a difficult challenge sometimes to admit doubt and confusion, even, much less submit oneself to a process of having questions and uncertainty with a mentor coach. Nine, small changes lead to big changes. For example, professionals get overwhelmed with the amount of tasks and responsibility. And don't be afraid to get simple. Focus on and clarify one issue that can be dealt with specifically and effectively that day. The focus on a specific action exercises effectiveness and initiates a model of mastery. 10. Solutions, causes, and problems are not always related or even interconnected. The therapist attunes to problems, conflict, and development for progress to occur. Coaching uses this space to focus on creating a new story, to align the client's needs and ideals to strategize toward the client's goals. The coach listens to join talents and strengths with possibilities and vision to strategically pursue those goals. 11, a collaboration key. keeps both individuals on the same side, looking at the same scene together. Empathic resonance generates feeling understood. Then you can make powerful coaching interventions. Also, validation of what's possible will have several times the effect of focus on the negative. 12, the benefit of doing more of what's working and less of what's not will become evident and self-perpetuate. Now, again, don't be afraid to be simple. A physician client who has completed the 26th grade has forgotten how to talk simply. Remember, how you work with your client provides a model that will be imitated and downloaded of how they can work with their patients or their clients. And this is often something that is a huge selling point for your practices, to work with physicians, not to have them do a transition to another career necessarily, but to incorporate the tools and methods and principles of coaching to work with their clients, to use mentor coaching to enhance or expand or move to a different level their practices. And I say physicians, but I'm really meaning any professional here. So, finally, to create new experiences. I want to describe a study. Now, I know a couple of you have heard this from me before. I want to describe a study and have you guess the biggest change impact. Ben Fletcher at the University of Hertfordshire in the UK devised a study to get people to break their usual habits. Each day, the subjects picked a different option from poles of contrasting behavior, like lively, quiet, introvert, extrovert, reactive, proactive, talking about sports, talking about business. They would choose one and behave according to this assignment. So an introverted person would, for example, act as an extrovert for an entire day. Additionally, twice weekly, they had to stretch to behave in a way outside their usual pattern. Twice a week, they would eat something they had never eaten before, and twice a week, they would read something they had never read before. So, a different kind of reading than they'd ever done before. So, what do you guess was the most significant change in this group? The remarkable finding was that after 4 months, the subjects lost an average of 11 pounds. And 6 months later, almost all had kept the weight off. The weight loss impact of a non-diet, this had nothing to do with dieting. It was a study focusing on change and its impact. The rationale here was that getting people to look at their routine behavior and to choose what they did made them aware of choice. This is kind of story busting in an indirect way. In having to initially process decisions actively, they exercise their choice and decision-making abilities, extending to other choices, such as what to eat and what not to. In other words, they became very aware that they were writing their own story, that everything they did was a choice. And what they ate was a choice. It even got down for many to look at every bite was a choice. Then they began to ask themselves, is this choice in my best interest? This is a very conscious application. And it speaks to something that is, as a psychiatrist a long time ago, I had one of the major eating disorder treatment programs in the country, and with every patient, they agreed with a statement, when you are totally present, you will never eat symptomatically again. It's always when they zone out or disconnect in some way that they become unaware of choice and of being grounded. So, change occurs from the outside in at times, too. Someone has to change their internal model of assumption to sustain a new story. So, then in summary now, we've discussed aspects of the coach's catalyst to change in coaching, including the use of neutrality, empathic listening, insight, and some caveats of how to affect change in a client. So, among other things, next seminar, we'll look specifically at the 7 steps to change and to write a new story. And I encourage all of you to do the exercises and work pages yourself prior to our next seminar to get the most benefit. Okay, we're in discussion mode now and have a bit of time for your questions or observations or things you'd like us to talk about. What are you hearing in terms of the way you usually practice and way you work with clients? Is there any of what we've talked about now different? And is it what you expected in terms of how to work with professionals? Yolanda, any thoughts?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I sure can. Now.
Okay, very good. I wasn't sure if I was unmuted or not.
Okay.
Okay. So, my observation is that it's not much different from working with, quote-unquote, the general client.
Okay.
Sounds like you're doing the same work. Like you said, that confidence is a state of mind. So if I take the title off the person and work with them as an individual as I would with any other individual, there really is no difference. You still need to be present. You still need to not hijack the agenda. You're still mirroring the stories. And the empathic listening, which we should have in any situation with a client.
Exactly. And that's the key, I think, to working with anyone, however that entry into the process is, whether it's an executive, whether it's a professional of any nature, or whether it's someone in life coaching, that the entry is different and the way of engaging someone is different, but then what you do is really using what you know and the engagement with someone to look at enhancing their own self-reflection, enhancing their regulation of themselves and their understanding of developing more of their empathic ability, more of their social and emotional intelligence. Sometimes the professionals and the executives especially, so much of the work is really developing their own awareness of themselves, their dynamics, the dynamics of other people, what works in a professional or an executive setting, how to develop their social and emotional intelligence to interact with others in a meaningful way, to interact with clients in a meaningful way. Let me tell you just a story or two that I tell physicians who I do. I've done some work. I mentioned the example I gave of the mentor who I did the demo coaching with at their national meeting, developing an internal mentoring program with that corporation. I've done some work with physicians and physician groups to help them incorporate the tools of mentor coaching. And one of the things that I get their attention with is that it's a different model. It's a model of consulting versus collaboration. The model of an expert, an attorney, a dentist, a financial professional, a physician, is an expert model, a model of consulting. Someone comes to you, a patient comes to you, has a problem, is motivated by pain, maybe by fear, goes to the trouble of making an appointment, schlepping across town, parking, waiting. So they're adequately motivated to consult with the expert. The expert then tells you what to do. Let's say that includes a prescription. Now, let's look at how that works. For someone who is given a prescription, how many do you think follow this expert advice by just simply filling the prescription? Slightly less than 50% fill the prescription after they've gone to the whole trouble and been very motivated to get expert advice and pay for it. How many people who fill the prescription comply with it as directed by their expert? Slightly less than 50%. So less than 1 in 4 people in the low 20%, so about 23%, of people actually comply with that advice as directed. Now, contrast what happens instead of giving advice when you collaborate with someone and help them create their own story, their own wellness, their own caretaking story. When they sign on to tell their own story and to have their story enhanced and developed and refined by a collaborator, in this case the physician, compliance goes through the roof. People find a way of being effective and of experiencing mastery because they've established what they want to do, what they want to get out of it, and it's become their story, and they have an expert consultant to help them enhance their story. One other example of people who go into the coronary intensive care unit after a massive heart attack. They're told, they're educated while they're there about what they'll have to do to change their lifestyle, their nutritional and exercise habits, if they hope to live any reasonable period of time in the future, given just what's happened. How many people do you think change in any even minor ways about exercise, nutrition, and lifestyle? 1 in 9, even when they're facing death. So the expert consultant model has its limitations. The model that we're offering to help someone establish an awareness of working with people, even clients, as financial professional, as an attorney, and patients, doctors and dentists, in a different way, in a collaborative model where there's a joint ownership of the story, and it's really the clients or the client's point of reference, the patient's point of reference. So one thing that we can do in working with professionals is to help them understand, by both modeling and by doing mentoring along with their own mentor coaching, about the practices and principles, the tools, methods, and principles of mentor coaching that they can then incorporate with their patients or their clients without becoming mentor coaches themselves. So this is a way to enhance their effectiveness, their practice, and their reach so that they experience more mastery and they help their clients or their patients experience more mastery. Because simply the other way of doing it is not going to work as well. I mean, how many of us know exactly what to do to get, we have the information. If it were based on information only, and we all have that information, we'd eat mostly vegetables, we'd work out every day, we'd save money for the future. I mean, we'd do all these things. It's not having information that is the key to success. It's someone creating their own story and doing that. That's what we can do as coaches. That's what the fundamental coaching model is designed to do when you ask the client, what do you want to focus on today? They take ownership of that story for that segment of time. Where do you want to get to? What do you want to walk away with? They take ownership for the success map for that session. So they've determined the focus and the goal of that session, so they've taken ownership. It becomes their story. We then become the catalyst of that. Same with professionals. And I think an additional aspect is that it may be a bit of mentoring of conceptualizing that story with them, just as we're doing right now, that helps them get it so that they can not only do it for themselves and their practices, but also that they can also convey it and model that for their clients and conceptualize it in terms of what they do with their clients for every professional. I took a lot longer to respond to that question than I intended. Other question, we have just about a minute. Other thoughts or questions that any of you have? Well, I encourage you to send responses to those couple of questions you'll see in your email. It will help me a good deal in getting a read on exactly what will be most useful to each of you. And don't hesitate to, you know, to ask or clarify or present any situation that's been challenging to you at the beginning or the end. I'll always save some time for us discussion, to have discussion at the beginning and at the end. So thanks very much for all of your energy and participation. Thanks to those of you who sent some thoughts along. And please, the rest of you do that. I would welcome that very much. Thank you.
Dave?
Yes.
If I could just add one more thing before we part, this is Yolanda.
Go for
it. I think pretty much what you said towards the end here, that the difference between when you go to the doctor and they give you this advice, and you know, or you're in ICU and they tell you don't eat this stuff again and yada yada yada, you're sent home. But the point is, who's holding you accountable? And that's, I think, the difference there with the coaching, where we do provide accountability.
That's another big difference. Yes, absolutely. That it's a partnership, a collaborative partnership, not one of authority, but a collaborative partnership of we're doing this together. And this is something often that professionals don't have, is a sense of collaboration and partnership, because it's like they should be the expert. And it's not about expertise either way. It's about collaboration, about what's going to work the best. So, yeah, thank you for adding that. Thank you all very much. Have a great rest of the week. I look forward to picking up with you here, right here next week. Bye now.
Thank you so much. Bye.
See you guys.